As I have already told you, among the good customs for ordinary existence that reached your contemporary favorites from ancient times, many are still practiced by the beings of various communities of the continent of Asia. Certain of these customs appear at first sight absurdly strange and barbaric, but on close and impartial investigation of their inner meaning, one is astonished by the skill with which certain moral or hygienic benefits were incorporated in them for the people who follow them. Take as an example what appears to be one of the most senseless customs found among a certain tribe of Asiatic beings called Kolenian Lurs, or Kolenian Gypsies, dwelling between Persia and Afghanistan. This custom, which the other beings of your planet called Gypsy self-fumigation, however stupid it may appear, produces the same result as the Persian custom of ablution or abdast. This Gypsy tribe is regarded as the lowest and filthiest of all the tribes existing on the earth. And indeed, they are so filthy that their clothes are always swarming with the insects called lice. By the way, their custom of self-fumigation also serves to destroy these insects. Although the members of this tribe are really exceedingly filthy, not only do no venereal diseases exist among them, but they have never even heard that such diseases can be contracted. In my opinion, their freedom from these diseases is entirely due to that custom of theirs, which some sensible being of olden times invented for the welfare of the people of his epoch, and which, passing from generation to generation, chanced to reach these contemporary filthy beings of the tribe of Kolenian Gypsies. For this rite of self-fumigation, every family of Gypsies has what is called an atesh kain, or stool of a special form which they regard as sacred, and the entire ritual is performed with the aid of this sacred stool. Every one of these Gypsy families also has what is called a tandoor, that is, a special kind of earthen pit, such as is found in almost every house in Asia, that serves as a hearth on which they bake bread and prepare food. In these tandoors, they burn chiefly what is called kiziak, a fuel composed of the dung of quadruped animals. The rite consists in this. When the family of Gypsies returns home in the evening, they first remove all their clothes and shake them out over the tandoor. It is almost always hot in the tandoor because the dung burns very slowly and the embers from the kiziak keep the fire burning for a very long time. It is interesting to remark, by the way, that when these Gypsies shake out their clothes over the tandoor, a highly interesting phenomenon results from this action. Namely, the lice crawl out of their clothes, fall into the fire, and explode before burning. And the sounds of the explosion of these lice, large and small, produce a surprising musical symphony. Sometimes these explosions of lice give one the impression that dozens of their machine guns are being fired somewhere not far off. Well then, after these worthy Gypsies have shaken out their no less worthy clothing, they proceed with the sacred ritual. First of all, solemnly and with a certain ceremony, they lower their sacred family stool into the tandoor, and in turn, from the oldest to the youngest, they step onto the stool. The sacred stool consists simply of a narrow board to which four iron legs are fixed, and thanks to this stool, it is possible for them to stay in the tandoor without burning their feet in the hot embers. As each member of the family in turn stands on that sacred stool, all the others sing their sacred canticle, while the one standing upon the stool, bending his knees, slowly and solemnly lowers and raises himself. and at the same time recites prayers. The custom requires that he should do this until all parts of his sex organs have been warmed by the tandoor. I saw another custom, very similar and seemingly just as stupid, among the people of another small tribe called the Tusuli Kurds, dwelling in Transcaucasia not far from Mount Ararat. This tribe is not dirty like the Colenian gypsies. On the contrary, these people, from their daily bathing in the Aras River and from their life in the open, they are chiefly shepherds, are not only very clean, but they even do not give off the specific odor peculiar to the people of almost all the small tribes which populate this great Asia. Each family of this tribe of Kurds has its own what is called saklia, which serves as a dwelling and for the reception of guests, as the custom of visiting one another is highly developed in this tribe. In each saklia or hut, it is customary for them to have in a corner by the entrance what is called a sacred mangal, that is, a hearth on which a fire of charcoal or kizyak is constantly smoldering. And near each sacred mangal hangs a small wooden box called ktalnots, which is always kept supplied with the roots of a certain plant. The rite of self-fumigation requires that before going into the principal section of the hut, each member of the family and each guest of either sex must enter this sacred mangal in order to purify himself, as they say, from the influence of those evil spirits by which man is surrounded when he is busy with honest work. And this purification is carried out in the following manner. Everyone on going into the hut must approach and take a few roots out of the hanging box and throw them into the fire, and then, in the smoke from the burning of these roots, fumigate the sex organs. If it is a woman, she simply spreads her skirt and stands over the mangal. If it is a man, he either takes off or lets down his sharvars and also stands over the smoke. Only after such purification can they enter the main room. Otherwise, as they believe, not only will evil influences be brought into the house, but through the accumulation of these influences, a man might contract very serious diseases. These sacred mangals are usually screened off by the very best jejims, that is, special fabrics, woven only by the Kurds. I repeat, my boy, at the present time on the continent of Asia, there exist many similar customs. I personally saw hundreds of them, which at first sight seemed no less strange and barbarous. But upon a serious and impartial study of their hidden meaning, always revealed the same aims. On the one hand, the destruction of the noxious carriers of various diseases, and on the other, the strengthening of moral shame. But on the continent of Europe, I found scarcely a single custom specially created, either for purposes of hygiene or for instilling a moral sense among the masses. There's no denying that various customs do exist on the continent of Europe, even thousands of them, but the beings there have established them all only to have the possibility of pleasing one another, or to conceal the real state of affairs, that is, to disguise the undesirable forms of their outer appearance. Undesirable, of course, only according to their subjective conceptions, and to conceal the nullity of their own inner significance. The customs prevailing there at present increase year by year the opposition between the personality and the reason of those beings. But the principal evil lies in this, that at the present time, the entire Oskianotsna of the rising generation, or the education of children, is reduced to the adoption of these innumerable practices that exist among them and engender only immorality. Hence it is that on the one hand, the data crystallized in them during tens of centuries for aiding the formation of a being in the image of God and not simply of an animal, as they would say, are decrystallized year by year. And on the other hand, their psyche is becoming almost such as our dear teacher describes by the words, "There is everything in him except himself." And indeed, my boy, owing to the complete absence of good patriarchal customs and to their notorious education, the contemporary beings of that continent have already become completely transformed into what are called automatons, or living mechanical puppets. At the present time, they can become animated and manifest themselves outwardly only when one happens to press the buttons corresponding to impressions already present in them and mechanically perceived during their preparatory age. And unless these buttons are pressed, the beings there are nothing more, as again our highly esteemed Mullah Nasr Eddin says, than assorted pieces of meat. It should be noted here, my boy, that one of the principal causes of this state of the beings of contemporary civilization is also that same onanism of theirs. This disease, which in recent times is almost epidemic, is a consequence of their education, which inculcates, among other principles, a certain maleficent idea that has become profoundly rooted in the consciousness of everybody, the idea that it is absolutely improper to speak to children about the question of sex. Moreover, I stress the fact that this idea, considered so trifling by their naive reason, and whose significance none of them grasps, regarding it simply as a question of decency or indecency, is the chief cause of their phenomenal psychic mechanicality. In the totality of fixed concepts, which they call education, there is even a certain section elucidating and designating exactly what is decent and what is indecent to say to children. Toward the end of my last sojourn on the surface of your planet, I had to study this painful terrestrial question in great detail, so that you may know approximately what results the contemporary education of children leads to, I will tell you about a certain incident which was the starting point of my special interest in this terrestrial misunderstanding. This incident took place in the large community of Russia, but the story I am going to tell you is very characteristic and gives a good general picture of the education of children in contemporary civilization. It is characteristic because in this large community of Russia, the responsible beings, especially those of the ruling class, do their utmost to bring up their children in exactly the same way as the responsible beings of the other contemporary communities on the continents of Europe and America. Before telling you about this incident that evoked in me an impulse to acquaint myself specially with the question of the terrestrial education of children, I will tell you of something that occurred just prior to it, which admirably illustrates the significance of this upbringing of theirs, and which also served, as it were, as a link in arousing my interest in that problem.